So hello and welcome to the Shropshire Witches podcast. So this is actually our Christmas special and things are starting to get really festive over at the Shropshire Witches podcast HQ,
They
which
really
makes it
are.
Sound really fancy. It's not, it's our spare rooms.
So basically, yes.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking all things Christmas and really about how the season was celebrated in Shropshire, but also linking it to some wider traditions and exploring what Christmas means.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So hello everybody. Amy is quite right. At Shropshire Witches HQ, we are raring to go. We've both been very, very busy with the build up to Christmas and we're very excited to record this one. And so like Amy says, yep, we're going to go over some of the Shropshire side of things. Well, certainly Amy is, because she is very good on the Shropshire history. And then we're going to kind of discuss a couple of sort of broader subjects to do with Christmas as well. Just get you all ready and raring to go. So, Amy, do you want to kick us off?
Yes. So what I want to start by looking at is kind of what Shropshire symbolised in primarily the 18th and 19th centuries, not what Shropshire symbolised, what Christmas symbolised to Shropshire in those centuries. So a lot of our folklore from the period is of the period of the 18th and 19th century. And again, very heavily from Charlotte Byrne and Georgina Jackson and people like that.
Yeah.
But we're told that there was a real connection in Shropshire between Christmas and the concept of charity. So much like All Saints and All Souls Day, there was a idea that this period should be a time where we share the fruits of the earth with the poor. Okay. And it's interesting because it's not unique to Shropshire, but there is around 12 in some references, 12 periods of the year, Christmas being included, where you can actually beg for alms and do that in a completely acceptable way socially. And Christmas was a time where you would go from house to house begging for alms and even things like, so from the 21st of December, St. Thomas Day, farmers, particularly your more well-heeled farmers, would set aside a sack of wheat for the poor or whatever your crop was. So if your crop wasn't wheat, you wouldn't put that to one side. And then you would get all of the different cottagers' wives, and in kind of areas that are a little bit more industrial, the miners' wives, they would go from house to house and they would collect their share of what they would call the dole.
Okay.
And
oh,
this
dole,
would
sorry.
Pardon?
Did you say the dole?
Yes, the dole.
Oh, right, so that's, yeah. Okay, well, we know that was still like, yeah, okay, that's interesting. I didn't realise it had got that kind of history. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no, so they would go from house to house and they'd collect their share of the dole. And that would depend on various different things. So, for example, if you had a massive family, you had loads of kids, you would get more of the wheat or whatever the produce was that the farmers were offering. And it also depended on also your level of poverty. So if you really were on hard times, you were given a lot more than, say, somebody who was a little bit better off. And this custom was widespread throughout all of Shropshire, really from the 18th through to the 19th centuries, and in some circumstances, a little bit later, getting into the 20th century. And it's known by lots of different names. So, for example, in Church Stretton, Much Wenlock and Pulverbatch, it was known as going a Thomasin, with its link to St. Thomas's Day.
Okay.
In Clun, it was Clog Fair Day, which I think is probably linked to the idea of the long walks that were involved with such a practice. And you get lots of rather lovely descriptions of women donning the oldest clothes that they owned, and some of them even opting to wear kind of their husband's cast off smocks or big coats to heighten their illusion of poverty.
Yeah.
And that's not to suggest that they were kind of tricking the system or anything like that, but it was almost part of, I think, the way I've seen it, part of the pageantry of it, is that you would emphasize your poverty in order to get that alms and get that amount of kind of charity. Mm-hmm. We are told that certain people would take advantage of it, and kind of play the system a little bit. I hate using that phrase, but they would go round the houses twice, or they'd send one of their children round and then they'd go round. But that was more due to the poverty that they were living in. And there seems to be a kind of agreement that it was better for them to get the donated wheat or the donated whatever it was than for them to go hungry.
Yeah, of course. I think that makes sense, yeah.
As well as that, there were times in kind of from St. Thomas's Day where people would either collect the dole and bake bread, or women who were the farmers' wives would bake bread for them to take as well as the dole. And many bread seems to have a real special significance during this period. And there would be Christmas batches of bread. Also, around Clun, the farmers were known to be particularly generous, and they would hand out what was called a double dole, where they would give wheat for the family and also barley for the pigs or the animals that were there. And that's really interesting, because there's quite a lot, as I'll kind of explore in a little bit, of folklore that's attached to animals and the way animals are treated during this period. But it just
is it sad?
Genuinely, yeah.
Oh,
pardon.
I was just saying, is it sad? Because I hate the idea of animals.
Like, no. On the contrary, it's actually, they're treated very fairly around this period. And there's a lot of kind of cautionary folklore that if you don't treat your animals in a certain way, you'll get in trouble.
Okay.
But this dole, I think, held such an importance to this period and to people who were living. I think there's a tendency at times, I've probably explored this in previous episodes, to look at rural life even now with rose-tinted specs, and to think that it's this beautiful rural Arcadia where everything was perfect all the time. But things like Thomasin or Clog Day, as it's known in Clun, they emphasize the realities, I think, for many people living during this period who were living on the breadline, but also the level of community that was associated with these traditions. At the end of the day, you wouldn't go begging around houses if it wasn't being encouraged. So I think these kind of practices, and this is where I suppose it links to All Saints and All Souls Day in Shropshire, is that this is a way for the community to look after each other and to ensure that no one is going without. And when you think about in our time, you know, Christmas still has that emphasis on charity, that emphasis, or at least in some spheres, and on ensuring that people are looked after and that they don't go without. And I think it's really interesting to see this enduring legacy of it.
Yeah, I think that's extraordinary. That's really interesting. And I think it's, you know, this idea that of things kind of prevailing and things were sort of maybe deemed as a kind of hangover from the past seems a bit sort of, you know, like a sort of discriminatory. But I think it's this idea of the old world and things sort of still continuing. And of course, like the idea of Christmas itself, really, with Saturnalia, which to a lot of people these days is sort of more and more known, I imagine. But this idea of celebrating festivals and at Christmas, and I think it's what's interesting about this is, and particularly when you're looking at a rural community as well, it was a way of breaking up the winter, because the winter was a long old time. And it did have more of a, I suppose, secular, but in terms of pre-Christian. And then even going into like rural communities, it still remained a bit like that. You had something that maybe in all but name was like Saturnalia, the Roman festival, which had the Lord of Misrule, where basically the natural order as they saw it, rather than to like hasten to add, this is not how I see the natural order, but that idea of the social hierarchy was turned upside down. So what would have been your equivalent of the Lord of the Manor became the servant, and, you know, roles were reversed. And this idea really, they come from the ancient world, was still going on, sort of going well into Christian times. And in the 8th century, they were still moaning about the fact that there were still people, particularly in Rome, celebrating Saturnalia in the way that they'd always done. So eventually it did start to celebrate Saturn's wife instead of him. But it's interesting because the church started to see it more as a holy day rather than obviously a holiday as we would now see it. But they came up with things that probably, like we were saying about carols and things, would have been, wassailing and whatnot. They would have had their own version of that with phrases, things that they all said. I think humans' kind of proclivity for partying and using any excuse seems, pretty timeless. And the idea that the church came in, they're like, do you know what, guys? We're just going to cock block the whole thing. Okay. If we're going to do anything, we're going to use poor Jesus and his birthday to make sure you don't have any fun. And you're like, this is like an advent calendar with no chocolate in it. Like, it's great. It's fine. But let's not pretend it's as good as like the bit when you get, I don't know, some Maltesers in there or whatever. But I think it's really interesting. I think also the fact that the date kind of oscillated and then eventually settled on the 17th of December, I think is really, really fascinating. And eventually it moved further and further across. And then we ended up on the 25th and it was decided that was when Christmas would be. And it's this idea that it dipped and waned, and we can go more into it in the Tudors and the Victorians most famously. But of course, this idea that I always find it fascinating. So these days, there's always people saying, oh, Christmas in my day, and when it was like this. And I think, oh, for goodness sake, historically, it comes from a pagan festival where basically it was an absolute free for all. People did whatever they wanted. Yeah. They completely like wreaked absolute havoc. All order was kind of, as I say, order in their kind of view was all disrupted, and people did what they wanted. And then, like I say, the church were like, right, let's just dampen things down a bit, okay? Because we love to be a bit of a killjoy. I'm going to jump in very quickly because jumping in on myself, but I mean, just in terms of it not being quite sort of chronologically in order, but hey, thought it was the Shropshire Witch, we can do what we want. But I think, warming to the theme of like chaos, I don't think anybody, I think you'll agree with this. So there's something about the Victorian age that people always seem to think it was the age of, of moral living and all this stuff. You think those guys were fucked up, like they did some bad stuff, but their idea of Christmas, you've got this wholesome image of Queen Victoria, who was not great, let's just face that, and was a bit of a strange mother, but sitting by the fire with her children all doting on this kind of Victorian image of what a Christmas looks like. And this idea of Prince Albert bringing in the Christmas tree was not. Queen Charlotte actually had them. Albert sort of popularised them. But I got to talk about the idea of the Victorian message of Christmas, which is kind of goblins, killer frogs, things like this, evil spirits, subversive snowmen. These guys were nuts. They loved it. But you got what they called as Yuletide spite, which I just think is brilliant. Merry Christmas. And here's some Yuletide sprite on the side. Spite, not sprite. But
you can have sprite too.
Yeah, busy. Lovely. So this idea of sending Christmas cards, which, again, wax and wanes in terms of how often people do it. 1843, Henry Cole. That's regarded as the first kind of commercial Christmas card. But from the 1870s, when they brought in the halfpenny stamp, obviously postage was then accessible. So you have people sending cards. What do you get the second people are able to do things kind of en masse is they start to create their own sense of humour and own sense of weirdness into it, which is like everybody. It's like having a kind of, notes at school and stuff and someone draws a cock and balls. Like we never agree with that, okay? And the Victorians, they loved it, but they honestly did like some really weird stuff. Like they loved a dead robin. So like obviously the poem who killed Cut Robin, but they loved a dead robin on a card. A child boiled in a teapot, lovely. And then you had a this one kills me, a clown sneaking up on a policeman to assault him.
Yeah.
Like, don't turn around, in bloody hell, it's a bit sinister. And then there's a frog killing another frog on his soft tummy, like to nick his money. This stuff is fucked. Okay, I know I shouldn't swear at Christmas, but tough it is, it's mad. But they would include messages like, may you have a merry Christmas unlike this unfortunate amphibian. Is there anything more Victorian? But in the Middle Ages as well, in the Renaissance, because they loved being rude, they were cock mad, they would have snowmen and stuff, but they were really explicitly sexual. So you would have things that were like unicorns and mermaids and all these kind of really kind of fascinating artistic themes. But then you would also have sexualized images. Like there was one of a sex worker with a dog, between her legs, not to be too graphic about it. There was a snow cow, and it said it delivered turds, farts, and stinking. So there you go. And a defecating centaur. And also, you had a mannequin piss, as they called it, which was the small boy urinating in the mouth of a drinker. And there was another one that had a drunk drowning in his own excrement.
Feliz Navidad.
I've heard that song so many times this week. It's only Monday. But yeah, honestly, just the lols from that, I was like, it goes on, but I think like we can go back to Shropshire. But just this idea that people are always like, oh, Christmas, it was so nice in my day, and now it's just this kind of over commercialized thing. You're like, oh, just go back to the dog and the sex worker, shall we, or the small boy pissing, or the man drowning in his own snow excrement. I don't know, whatever, like, seems lovely. You're like, fine, whatever you need to do. But I think it's kind of important that we know, the Christmas, as with all things, that people are weird and people have a weird sense of humour. And I think, you know, yeah, absolutely, we will always try and make things seem prim and proper with religion. But ultimately, people's proclivities and kind of want of being just a little bit mischievous. You know, like the 12 Days of Christmas came from this. There was a book, and I can't remember the full title. It was something like fun without mischief, basically, which is like, you know, spoiler, fun without actual fun. You know, but it's, people have always invariably made carols rude. They've always made songs about penises. They will always make rude things out of snow, whether it's 500 years ago, whether it's now. We're no different.
And long may it continue.
Exactly. I love it. Right, go on. What else have you got for us?
So I think it's really interesting. You kind of several points, and that's really interesting, because just want to briefly mention the Lord of Misrule.
Oh yeah, please.
He absolutely pops up everywhere at one point in Shropshire's kind of history and folklore. Mm-hmm. But during kind of the 17th, 18th century, we're told that Shrewsbury and much of Shropshire were never told and exactly told and told.
It's all right. I'm we're busy. You know, we're allowed to forget how to speak. It's not a problem. Please, yeah. Continue.
I'm never told exactly how much of Shropshire, but we're just told much of Shropshire was. And I love the way they describe it. They say in the records that was at the mercy of gangs of marauding Morris dancers. And the leader of the musical mob was the Lord of Misrule.
Yeah.
The idea of, and I know that Morris dancing, it's got like a fascinating history in Shropshire and elsewhere as well. And that it has always been a bit bawdy, and particularly kind of in that period of time, it was quite bawdy. But the idea of them marauding and causing mayhem wherever they went, I think it says as well, is just hilarious to me. And often the funding came from the Shrewsbury Corporation. So the actual kind of like people in charge would fund this group of Morris dancers to go and cause absolute mayhem. And that was particularly prominent. It happened all over in kind of the wakes, whenever there was a wake or that kind of thing, but it was particularly prominent at Christmas. So keep an eye out for marauding Morris dancers is all I can really suggest during this time. But I agree with what you were saying about Christmas having this kind of bawdy element to it. And it's really interesting with Shropshire's folklore, because that is present, but it's almost as if, at least according to the records we have, that there's a time and place for it. Mm-hmm. And there's, as you see with a lot of folklore in Shropshire, there is a set amount of things you need to do before you're allowed to do another thing. There's a set amount of things you need to do in order to be proper, in order for it to be proper. Yeah. And there's a real emphasis in Shropshire on the 12 days of Christmas, which is a period that was known at the time as the Christmas, which I think is very formal, the Christmas. And the Christmas was a time of preparation, ultimately. So there was a set day for the killing of beasts and poultry. There was a set day for making the puddings and the Christmas cake. And then there was a set day for the deep clean. The deep clean was universally practiced in some houses, like my mum and dad's house. It's still practiced. My mum is a big fan of the deep clean any time of the year, but also at Christmas. And this was when the everyone in the from the farmhouse to the stately home would down tools and take to scrubbing. It said that even the slovenliest maid, I don't know what she'd be like, probably quite bawdy, was unable to leave the house dirty at Christmas. And even the most humblest dwellings, kind of your squatters' cottages, would be scrubbed spotless, which I think in a way is, they say in the sources, it's to greet Christ, and it's the idea of greeting the birth of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
It's at least linked to, but I think it's also because this is probably one of the times that you would spend the most time in your own home, so you'd want it to be nice.
Okay.
In wealthier houses, they would get even all the silver and the pewter out, and they were told to make the pewter bright enough to see their caps in them. And there's a specific link in Charlotte Byrne with shining the pewter in these stately homes and these wealthier homes, and it being a charm to ward away the fairies.
Mm-hmm.
It said that if the pewter was dull, the fairies would pinch the servant girls black and blue and steal any pewter of value.
God alive.
But if it was shiny and clean, the fairies would leave them alone and place coins as gifts in the shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told that some of the more kind of nicer mistresses would even slip the coins in the servant girl's shoes themselves to as a reward. I love the idea of this sort of cleaning being linked to fairies. It's the idea, oh well, if you don't clean, if you don't make it sparkling, the fairies will come and pinch you black and blue and that kind of thing. It's just a kind of excuse to get them to work a bit harder.
Yeah.
But it is nice that there was that idea and that element of reward. A lot of the cleaning of kind of like the farmhouses as well was often a communal effort.
Mm-hmm.
So all the farm labourers' wives would be called in to help, or the women in the community would go around the houses and help each other. And I like the idea of it being like a communal effort. It's a time for sharing. I'm sure there's a song somewhere in that saying that at Christmas, but the idea that everyone gets stuck in, everyone cleans up the muck, and everyone does what they can. Also, you have references to things like the mice being taken out of the house just in case they're witches.
Oh, no. Let them be.
Let them be. If they're witches, let them be.
Yeah, especially if they're witches. And if they're not, fine, whichever. But witchy mice, love that.
Love it. I love it. Little hats and everything. That would be really cute.
I'd be like, that's a coven I want to be. And I mean, I'm a bit big. Yeah. He'll be like, let me in.
Let me in.
Yeah, be playing in the mice. Or like, please, I know I'm massive, but let me in. Like, massive compared
I've
to
I've lost
people.
My way on the moor. Let me in.
Yeah, like, this is your house. Shut up. Just let me in. The Cathy Earnshaw trying to get in with the, oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I escalated, but yeah, sorry, carry on.
No, it's fine. And I think only when this cleaning, this deep clean is done, which is kind of the final stage or one of the final stages of the Christmas,
mm-hmm.
You can go and have fun. So
okay.
It's reported that in the 19th and the 20th centuries, local foresters, they'd leave their regular work at the time of Christmas as well, and they would essentially dedicate all of their efforts to cutting and digging Christmas trees up, and then they'd sell them either to like the local folk, or they might even cross over the border to Tenbury Wells and sell them at a Christmas auction, which so it's a nice day out for them.
Very cool.
And we're told as well that once you had done all the cleaning and you'd made the house shiny, everyone was allowed to go a Christmasing, and including the servants. So the servants were allowed to take the day off work and go a Christmasing, which was visiting each of us houses and spending much of their time when they are in work, if they've got no one to visit, to complete tasks for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that was seen as an extension of charity, the idea that you've worked for me all year, so you can go and visit your family, or if you have no family, you can do what you need to do during this time, because it's Christmas, why not? So there is, again, that weaving of the idea of charity into Christmas. But then once that's finished, there's a lot more of a focus on making merry, being jovial, and probably quite bawdy.
Mm-hmm.
We're told that a favourite pastime of Salopians, I can't say it's a favourite pastime of myself, is dancing.
Yeah.
So apparently we like to cut up a rug at Christmas. and well, the young women of the...
good again, yeah.
Yeah, so I dance like Squidward, so I'm not very good at dancing. Very niche reference that. I seem to bring the SpongeBob references quite a bit, but Google it.
I will afterwards. I'll be like, okay, let's Squidward, is it?
Squidward dancing.
Well, no one says Squidward, is it? Yes. Like
yes. Yeah, what is it?
Said no one ever, but yeah, carry on.
But apparently we love dancing, and particularly the young women of the farms, they would put on their most beautiful dresses. They'd style their hair with ribbons and ensure that they were dutifully admired. So they're going out for a bit of, you know, bit of cock, basically. Or at least to...
I was wearing, like, what lovely phrase. She's bit of cock, really. They're just going out for a bit of cock-a-doodle. So that's...
And if they're not, they're at least being a bit of a cock tease.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, God, I'm to know.
Dutifully admired.
Yeah, dutifully admired. God, that's like something you'd say if you were up, like, you know, if you're up on charges for no good. Well, I was just dutifully admiring her. Were you? Because I think it's not convinced, but yeah, carry on.
Yeah, I love the way they describe things in the past. You're out looking for a man, weren't you?
Yeah, I was going to say that's not dutifully admired.
Yeah. And all the women and the young men would go to the local village hall, or if it wasn't a village, it was more of kind of like an area like Ironbridge, Jackfield, that kind of area. You'd go to the village pub or the pub, and there'd be an evening of dancing. There'd be the sound of singing, a band. There was always a fiddle, at least one fiddle being played, we're told as well, according to the folklore, which is interesting because the fiddle has such an interest in folklore in itself. It's often very linked to the devil and that kind of thing. So it almost kind of heightens the idea of the temptation of the period.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as well as dancing and putting ribbons in our hair, we love playing games. And I think this is a wider Victorian thing anyway, the idea of these parlour games coming into being. But you've got games such as Blind Man's Buff, Bobbing for Apples, and Riddles. Riddles, we had such a grip on Shropshire folk. And it was really a time to just have fun, particularly if you had a very hard or difficult year. It was a time to cut loose and enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
As well as this, every village hall and farmhouse would hang a kissing bush, which was a bunch of evergreens and mistletoe. And basically, it's the same as what we have now, the idea that if you stand under the kissing bush, you've got to have a bit of a snog. So it was a very bawdy time. Once you'd done the preparation, you were allowed to enjoy yourself and just kind of probably be young and the same way that we do nowadays, really. Yeah, not me, because I'm old as the hills, but
I was just about to say, I was like, be young. I was like, do you remember that?
Yes, vaguely.
Somewhere it happened. I mean, talking about what you just did, I think it kind of opens the idea of mistletoe, because you do still see mistletoe around, although I think people are a bit more nervous of it these days, because obviously, you know, it's some people were opportunists. Again, it's another Saturnalia hangover, because they were obsessed with winter fertility rituals, which I love. There is a myth that it came from something of a nice but quite weird story about a Viking. It's a Viking myth. Frigg was the goddess of love, so that possibly that's where the word Frigg comes from. Which is not always deemed an act of love, but there you go. It's in the ballpark, I suppose. And marriage, and it's her son who died. Balder. I don't know if that's the right pronunciation.
Probably. Yeah, yeah.
He died. So let's do him a further injustice by mispronouncing his name. Balder was sort of, it was described as so beloved by his mother, so proper mummy's boy, fine. But and such by all things on earth. So, you know, creatures, everything, metal, plants, all this stuff. And there was one thing that was overlooked about him being, you know, something that he was loved by, and that was mistletoe. So Loki, the god, who was pretty jealous, because there's always a little jealous, creepy, you know, git in the
He's
back,
a
like Uriah.
dick, Loki.
Yeah,
Absolute dick.
what a dick. Yeah, Loki was a dick. Yeah, exactly. So here he is living up to his dick reputation. I love how angry you got that. He was a dick.
I love. God, I did my dissertation on Vikings, so I
hate so you
Loki.
love this. Okay, Loki's a
I
prick.
hate Loki. Dick.
He's a dick. That's merch. If we ever do merch, we'll be like, Loki is a dick. Instead, there was a little bit of mistletoe left, and so I'm afraid you're going to hate this. Loki made a deadly dart out of it and threw it at him, because of course he fucking did. And Frigg was obviously devastated because her son had been killed by Loki. And so she declared that mistletoe became a symbol of love and peace, and then promised that anybody who walked beneath it would kiss, so that he could be remembered. So it's a peaceful gesture in return for Loki's prickness. But the other bit I think is interesting as well is, of course, by the 19th century, it had, you know, Georgian era in the 19th century had become really the kind of the opportunist strike now. You know, if you got someone on the like, come on, Copperfield, with or without your consent. But, you know, Christmas obsessive, the American Washington Irving, who Dickens basically got a hard on over, said that the mistletoe with its white berries hung up to the imminent peril of all pretty housemaids. I think that's made even creepier by the fact that he says pretty housemaids rather than just housemaids. And you're like, do you know what, Irving? I reckon you've been copping a feel or two. But I just, you know, when like somebody says, I don't know, like if they're like, ooh, two lovely girls and all this stuff, you're like,
yes, pretty. Oh. Yeah. Cringe.
He's giving me the ick. And I just thought the fact that he was like, the imminent peril of all pretty housemaids. Oh, fuck off. Fuck off. One thing I do love as well is if we can talk about the Christmas carols, because we've talked about about wassailing and mumming, but I love sort of talking about some of the main Christmas carols. So Hark the Herald Angels Sing, absolute belter, and if we had sound effects we could sort of dub and do that, but we don't, so one day we will. The brother of the Methodist founder John Wesley, lad about town, his brother called Charles, penned about 9,000 hymns and poems. Like, Charles, mate, just wank or do something else. Like, there's other things. But he's like, I have written some 9,000 hymns and poems. Look, Charles, mate, I think that God.
A lot of effort.
I bet God totally appreciates it. But I think God's even going, bloody hell, Charles. Like,
stop being obsessed with me. Why are you so obsessed with me, bro?
Why are you getting mean? Why are you so obsessed with me? But like, no one likes a sycophant, Charles, okay? So take your fucking poems and hymns. And when you say poems, Charles, we know they're basically hymns. So he was said to have been inspired by the church bells one morning, because I think, you know, I think this is what you call classic Charles, really. And he wrote Hark the Herald Angels Sing, although it was originally Hark How All the Welkin Rings, not as classic, but yeah, which I think Welkin meant heaven or sky. But anyway, he took some music. So an organist took a tune by Mendelssohn. And apparently, originally, the tune for this had been stipulated, because it had been written on its 400th anniversary. And it had been said to be soldier-like and buxom and should never be used for religious purposes. But those humanists were like, I don't think so, okay? I think if we're going to take something bawdy, let's just make it a little bit Methodist. That's all I'm going to say. But I love other ones like The Holly and the Ivy. That's another absolute blinder. And that one, mankind's ability to find a penis in anything is staggering, and it's all very kind of Malleus Maleficarum, like his severed cocks, they're back. They're back. But the Christian Secret Santa, the Christian, I'd be opening and going, oh, can we swap? I have little to no need for any of these.
Please.
Please. But what I love about this is that they describe the holly with its phallic prickles. Like, I don't know what your cock looks like, but like, I'm going to wager it's not the prickles of a holly. Have you seen those little tiny pointed things? Whatever you got down there, boy, put your pants back on.
I'm scared.
I'd be like, oh, be a deer and get dressed. But what I love in contrast to this was the clinging ivy was the feminine. You're like, oh yeah, that's us. That's us just clinging to everything, clinging to the guy with the little phallic prickle. Mm. No, we're not. We're just living our lives. But because men love a hymn, they're like, oh yeah, the woman's doing the clinging and we've got phallic prickles. And you're like, sure, whatever you need. But it was said that courtiers and things just took such delight in that song being rude. You're like, was it actually rude? God, who only knows? But the other one as well, I will just quickly say that Deck the Halls, which came from a Welsh song, and a lot of my family are Welsh, and I can never pronounce anything. My grandmother said once I lack the Welsh lilt. Thank you. But there was an old song called Nos Galan. I don't know how to say that in Welsh. But I think it means New Year or something like that. But it by the 19th century, it become more Christmassy. And at some point, and I can tell you, all last week, I have been looking for the rude words to this, and I bet you'll find the straight away. Can I find the rude words, the original Deck the Halls? Can I bollocks? But it comes from an old folk song, and it's got rude lyrics apparently. And I was like, of course it has. And now it's the rather lovely Deck the Halls. So a lot of these I just find so interesting. I just adore it. I think it's really funny. And then obviously you have things like Figgy Pudding in Wish You Merry Christmas, which is the original version of Christmas pudding. I love it. And I think the other one that is kind of funny is 12 Days of Christmas, because basically Catholics, who kind of had to keep things a little bit strum for a while, didn't they? After the Reformation, they kind of had it so things like 12 Days of Christmas, you could have things that represented God, but call them something else. So it was quite interesting. So like my true love would basically be God, they say, perhaps not. But also the bit I thought was really interesting is the word perdrix, the French word, which basically sounds a bit like pear tree, and it was actually a partridge. So un perdrix, one partridge, sounds like pear tree. So some of it is probably going to be things that have been kind of distorted over time. But it's fascinating, all these things. And next time you sing the Holly and the Ivy, there you go. You can think of little pointy phalluses. Laugh.
I love that, and it is really interesting because you do have a real sense in Shropshire of kind of singing. Carol singing is massive in Shropshire,
Yeah.
and you do get references to people up in kind of the Shropshire Hills, in the Long Mynd, and then the cold, dark nights going out carol singing still well into the 20th century.
Yeah.
So it is such a prominent part of Christmas in general, but also Christmas within the county. And one could only imagine that when that fiddle starts playing in the pub, they get a bit
Oh yeah, I'd have thought
rude.
that. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. So go on, what else have you got for us?
So I want to just briefly talk about animals and the kind of the
Oh yeah, you
relationship
mentioned
between
that. Yeah.
Christmas and animals,
Yeah.
and then I'll move on and I want to look at kind of the idea of a Christmas staple feasting and
Yes,
what that
I'd
kind of
love that.
thing. So in Shropshire, there were several things during the Christmas, again, that idea of the 12 days, that were seen as taboo. One of them was women spinning. So no woman should do any spinning or any woman's work during that time. But also, it was seen as really taboo to work the animals during this period.
Good.
So, in particular, horses should not be used to plough. We're told that we shouldn't, no one should in the whole 12 days plough with the horses. And rather than working the animals during this time, the animals should get extra portions and extra rewards. So, a lot of the farmers opted to give their cattle extra portions. They would make sure that they were warm and safe during this time. And it was seen as a real time where you would kind of look after the animals and thank them for, particularly the ones that work, like your dogs, your horses, thank them for their efforts, which I think is rather lovely. As well as that, it was believed that all farm animals are particularly sensitive to the Christmas period. There's a rough reference. I've only ever found one reference to it, but one potential reason why they're sensitive to the Christmas period is because of the link to the idea of Jesus being born in a stable and the being surrounded by animals, that kind of thing. But I don't know whether that's the main reason or that's just something that was attributed to it. But all farm animals are particularly sensitive during the Christmas period. I don't know whether that means that they have a little cry or whether they see Jesus. I don't know. It's never mentioned. But cows are said to be the most sensitive. And
Oh,
it was
okay.
believed that if you went to the cowshed at midnight on Christmas Eve, you would see all the cattle on their knees in adoration of Christ.
Oh, okay.
But that's a marvelous spectacle to see. But it would result in but it would result in either blindness or death if you saw it. So
I love the way you deliver it. You're like, it's quite a spectre to see, but you'll go blind or deaf. So you take your pick.
Yes. Oh, so I love the idea. I love the idea of cows being
just a bit of both.
Yeah. I love the idea of cows being particularly pious, but wanting privacy in their worship. I don't know. I don't particularly see cows as being pious animals, but according to Shropshire folklore, they are. Like, when I mean, it's probably a bit of an aside, but if I think of an animal that would be pious, I imagine like a hedgehog or something. Like, I can imagine a hedgehog walking to church on a Sunday and being a pious little fellow.
Oh, they're determined, aren't they? But I mean, yeah. Like, I think the deaf and the blind, like, can you imagine, like, what a beautiful spin. Oh my God, what's happened? So
I can't see.
He can't hear you. He's gone deaf. Why? Just points to the shed. And then you're like, oh my God, I've gone blind. And you're like, so he's done it. So like, can you cows just get up?
Yeah.
You're causing absolute chaos.
Mad. So the animals were looked after, but let the cows have their privacy with their worship.
Yeah, well, watch out. Jesus Christ, talk about revenge.
Yeah. And it's also said that, to kind of link to that idea that you shouldn't do certain things during the Christmas period, women shouldn't sweep. I love that too. You also shouldn't throw the ashes out of the fire on Christmas Day for the fear of throwing them in the Saviour's face. If you did have to sweep, you sweep it into the hearth rather than out the door to ensure that you're not getting rid of any good luck that could come from the fire.
That's so cool, isn't it? I love it. That is so interesting. I've never heard that before. That is very cool.
And it's cool as well because it's all an excuse to put your feet up and enjoy Christmas. So that's one of the things I think is so fascinating about this, is it could be seen as a genuine level of piety, or it could be seen as, well, I can't throw the ashes out of the fire because it's throwing them in Jesus's face, so I can't do anything today. You know, and when people had such hard lives as they did often, no wonder they wanted to allow them to, you know. I think it's
brilliant. They're laughing when you say that as well. Like, he's back. Take that.
Yeah, just throw it. There's a lot of kind of other things. So for example, like the Yule log is quite prominent in Shropshire, and you're not supposed to share fire. So if you're meant to keep your fire burning for the whole 12 days of Christmas and ensure that it never dies out. But if your fire dies out, you shouldn't go to a neighbor to try and get some more fire from them. Like, oh, you know, here, have some burning coal, put it on your fire, because it's seen as insulting. So you have to kind of tend to your own fires rather than try and get something from someone else. And I want to just briefly go on to feasting, because
yeah please do,
it's quite interesting how prominent it's been in Shropshire, but also I suppose in any period of history, Christmas has an association with the Christmas feast. So I think it's an extension of the celebration, and it's a way to celebrate even the more kind of less socioeconomically comfortable homes would still have a feast at Christmas. And we have reference to kind of from about the 1500s that the Corporation of Shrewsbury, the same people who were paying the Lord of Misrule to go and cause havoc, they gained a reputation for sumptuous feasts during Christmas. And these feasts included a breakfast of roast beef, brawn, I don't really know what brawn is, mince pie and ale for breakfast.
Brawn is the cheek, I think.
Oh,
cheek! I'm sure that's what brawn is.
I wouldn't want to be the person at that feast going, oh, have you got any vegan options?
No, that would be us. They would be like, oh, sorry, I don't eat cheek.
Yeah, please.
Arse or face. So,
but that's just breakfast. So no one, like, God knows what the actual meal looked like. And we're told that the Christmas of 1576 at Longford included mince pies, a Versailles bowl to aid celebration, and loads and loads of courses of various meats, a bird within a bird within a pig, or whatever.
Oh yeah, the
floats
bird
your
within a
boat.
bird and a bird.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's there's a popular Shropshire maxim, or a popular at one point, that at Christmas you ate every part of the pig except the squeak. Which
That
is
is so Deliverance. That's horrid. That is harrowing. That is the
yes.
Christmas. That's Yuletide spite right there.
Yes. Deck the halls with every
Can you
bit of the
imagine
pig
that?
except for the squeak.
I'd be that much of a color. I would take everything bar the squeak. You'd be like,
Yeah.
oh, that seems like something Nigel Farage would say, like, or Clarkson,
Yeah.
wouldn't it? On his diddly squat farm, whatever, it's like diddly cock off. That makes no sense. It doesn't matter. Everything bar the squeak. Oh, piss off, Clarkson. He hasn't even said that. I'm annoyed with him.
And in Shropshire, pork does have a real link to the Christmas period. And I think that's probably because it was a readily available meat. Also, interestingly, St. Thomas was the patron saint of pig killing, not pigs, but pig killing.
Yeah, nice.
So he's a very interesting saint. He's a patron saint of other things, but he's the patron saint of pig killing, which is potentially why pig was the meat of choice during this year. Geese as well were quite common. And then all sorts of kind of mince pies, buns, plum cakes, and pikelets. So it was really was a time to stuff your face, and as it is now, eat, drink, and be merry.
With little guilt
Just,
until January, yeah.
yes, yeah. And mince pies, they've played a prominent role in Shropshire's kind of Christmas celebration since at least the 1500s. That's when I can find the most kind of concrete. There's things that could be that before, but that's kind of your most kind of 1500s, we'll say. And it was tradition when anyone visited your house during the Christmas period, so those 12 days, to offer them a mince pie, whether they liked it or not. So as soon
Mince
as
pie under
somebody,
duress. Just fucking eat
yeah,
it, all
eat
right?
it.
Jesus
And
Christ.
in Shropshire folklore, they're deemed incredibly lucky.
Are they? That's cool.
And
I love
yes,
mince pies. Yeah.
I do. So Shropshire folklorist Charlotte Byrne, she says that there is luck about a mince pie, and it's believed that during the 12 days of Christmas, every mince pie you eat, you receive a month of happy days or good luck.
Nice. I love
So,
that.
by my reckoning, I deserve about 3 years of it, I think, because I've been stressful.
Amazed. I say, come Christmas Day, I'll be catching you up.
Yeah.
I'm just behind you. So much luck
So
coming our way. Yeah.
you see this time in Shropshire that it is after a hard year of, the people we're talking about are the manual workers, the farmers, the miners. It's a time for them to enjoy themselves, to eat, to drink, to be merry. There's Morris dancing was really popular in South and West Shropshire, and they would perform door-to-door dances. In Newport and Edgemond, it's a little bit less lovely and a little bit more chaotic. So people would go from door to door doing kind of your mama's plays, loose retellings of the legend of St. George, and they would try and basically gain entrance to the house. And it's very similar to kind of some of the Welsh traditions, where there would be a bit of a back and forth where the performers would try and get into the house to the alcohol, and then they'd have to bribe them to go away. And it's all good fun.
I love it. It sounds fantastic. It's great. So if you've got anything else that you want to add about Shropshire?
Where do I start? No, I think
Yes.
it's not the sort of question you ask someone like me. I think I would say that Christmas was, I think so much of these traditions and these kind of activities were a way to bring joy into these darker times. I
Yeah,
think
agreed.
you've got it kind of all kicks off in Shropshire around the winter solstice, 21st of December, St. Thomas's Day. The solstice does move, but traditionally that's the day it was celebrated on. These are difficult, hard, physically it's harder to get up, it's harder to do things. It's, you know, they'd have had a very hard year, and this was a time where you could bring joy into it. You could sing your bawdy carols, and you make dick jokes and enjoy your community. And I think that's what's so special about this folklore. And also you can see parallels with how we celebrate it today. So I think it's just fascinating.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's, you know, it's such a nuanced time of year, and you know, look, I'm not going to put a damper on it, but for a lot of people it isn't a happy time of year, and I am and always will be very sorry for that. I think it's one of those things where there's happiness, there's always going to be sadness as well. But look, I think speaking in terms of keeping things light and jolly, because it's Christmas, and I think it's kind of, you know, if you can, I think now more than ever we need the gift of laughter and taking the piss out of things. You know, I think Christmas is one of those times that you can sort of come together. But like the idea of, you know, eating what you want, sort of largely doing what you want in the true Saturnalia style. They're maybe not quite as angry as the Morris men staving people's heads in and kicking doors in. But, you know, I thought a good place maybe to end on is a couple of fun facts. So yeah. I love this. So... the fake snow in The Wizard of Oz, 1939, and White Christmas, made in 1954, was made of asbestos.
Nice.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, one and all. There we go. Tell me what your lungs are doing in 5 years' time. So Cary Grant and Clark Gable apparently both met 1 year to exchange unwanted monogrammed gifts, which I find funny. Yes. Not that relatable, but anyway. Taking down decorations on the 12th night, so the 5th or the 6th of January, isn't it, is relatively modern, because in fact, for centuries, they were kept up till Candlemas Eve, the 1st of February.
I like that. I could go with that because I'm lazy.
That as well, exactly. And because it still feels nice to celebrate Mary and Joseph taking baby Jesus, I can't spell. Baby Jesus to the temple at Jerusalem, and showing him to his dad, which is all sort of quite modern in a weird sort of way as well.
Like, yeah,
the law appearing / your dad, apparently. Mary, up to no good. So I think, and one more, I loathe her, Thatcher, but apparently 1 year she saw or was made aware that the Queen washed up without gloves. So apparently Thatcher sent her a pair of rubber gloves.
Anyway, all right.
The Queen sent her some of the asbestos from White Christmas. She didn't. But yeah, there we go. So look, you can close us out here this week, Amy. But I just wanted to say thank you, everybody, for all the support. And I truly hope from the bottom of my heart that you can all have a wonderful Christmas, full of love, full of good food, and full of all the things that you enjoy. And as Tiny Tim rightly said, who, as they say in the book, did not die, or they would be dead by now, God bless us, everyone.
Excellent. And I think I completely mirror that sentiment. I hope you all have a lovely period, however you choose to celebrate it, if it's to, you know, go Morris dancing and cause some trouble, or something a bit more normal, like watching. For me, it's always a World's Strongest Man. That's my kind of.
Oh God, that's weird, but great. Yeah, I
love it. I know when it's Christmas. I've got a sandwich. I'm watching World's Strongest Man. But I hope you have a lovely period, and just enjoy yourselves. And thank you so much for all the support you've given us, because it's wonderful.
That's such a strange sentiment. I love it. I have a sandwich in the World's Strongest Man. God bless us, everyone.
It's the best. It's the best.
I love it. I'm obviously going to do that.
I watch it because I want to be the World's Strongest Man. It's nothing saucy.
God.
It's nothing like, oh, look at these big strong men.
God,
it's,
they look weird.
I want to be a strong man. Yeah. I want to be the World's Strongest Man. I want to be the universe's strongest man.
That's what I want to be like. And like, they're not hot. Most of them look like Republicans, or like they probably voted for Nigel Farage.
Potatoes.
They do. They're potatoes with right wing views. But look, thank you so much, everyone. Merry Christmas, and
Merry Christmas
very soon. Bye bye bye
bye bye. Bye.